This episode of Pat Trek is brought to you by Cards Against Humanity. They've asked us not to read an ad. Enjoy the show. We would like to thank the Chicago Podcast Co-op for bringing us that sponsor. The Chicago Podcast Co-op is a collective of excellent podcasts based right here in Chicago. Find out more at chicagopodcastcoop.com.
The late 80s. The final frontier. These are the voyages of the podcast Pat Trek. My continuing mission, to introduce my friend Patrick to the best show that ever ran on television. And to boldly go where millions of white guys with glasses have gone before.
Hello, and welcome to Pat Trek, the show where my friend Pat O'Rourke introduces me, Patrick Windegger, to Star Trek The Next Generation, a show that I have never seen.
And I have seen a ton of times. And Patrick, this episode's dope!
Deja Q.
Yeah! I love this one.
I like pretty much all Q episodes that I've seen so far.
Yeah.
Have generally been pretty solid.
The weakest Q appearance is in the very first episode.
Yeah.
Encounter at Farpoint.
Yeah. Because it's just... You know, it's the first episode.
Yeah. Well, it's got all the problems of the first episode.
Exactly.
And Q is the least developed version of Q.
Right.
Yeah. Well, joining us to help us talk about Q's third appearance?
I think fourth.
Fourth appearance is Brian Sebi. Hey, Brian, welcome back.
Hello. Thank you. Glad to be back.
Hot question. Third or fourth appearance of Q?
Oh, God.
You're on the spot. You're on the spot, Brian.
Let's see. There's Counter Farpoint.
Yep.
There was Q Who.
Yep.
And I'm trying to think if there's another one between this one. I think this might be the third.
That's what I'm saying.
Okay.
I think
all
it's
right.
Deja Q. So now we're both going to sound like
the second one was when he gave Riker powers, right?
Right.
Okay.
Dude, you're right. This is the fourth one.
Yeah, no, because the second one was when he gave Riker powers, and then we had Q Who.
Oh, man.
So this is Deja Q.
Okay.
Yeah. So
I
Patrick
think.
Whittaker
oh, you're
is
right.
the Star Trek expert on Pat Trek now. We have switched roles.
I believe the second one was Hiding Q.
Hiding Q.
Q.
Yeah,
yeah, that's right.
That's
we
right.
forgot about it. With the pigmen.
Yeah.
There were the pigmen.
The pigmen that they attacked Worf or something, mm-hmm. and yet Riker had all these amazing powers all of a sudden.
Isn't it Riker who like dumps the lemonade out?
Yeah.
Yeah. Great episode.
Really strange one.
Yeah.
But all of the Q ones, in my opinion, are pretty solid. I like them because they kind of like break up the story.
Mm-hmm.
It just... puts you in a goofy place, and sometimes, you know, this is episodic TV, it's a sci-fi show, sometimes you need that, you know, fantastical stuff thrown in the plot.
Speaking of fantastical stuff,
yeah,
we started a Patreon.
We did.
Yeah, we just launched it.
We did. It is, you can find it at patreon.com/PatTrek, the Patrekion, Patrekion.
Pat, Trakeon 2.
Yeah. What we're going to do for y'all is we will release premium content. All of the stuff, this episode that you're listening to right now, like all the TNG stuff, that's going to be free. You know, feel free to donate so we can keep the lights on here if you want to.
Mm-hmm.
But if you give $5 a month, you will have access to stuff like Star Trek Adventures. We will also start to do rundowns of the original series.
Yep.
That I have definitely not seen before.
And I've only seen a few times.
Right. So it'll be a different dynamic. And we hope to produce some nice premium content for y'all. So
yeah. And there have been a lot of requests for our actual plays of Star Trek Adventures.
Yeah.
So I think that's where those are going to live.
I think that's
right.
a good place.
They take so long to edit and there's so much work.
It is a lot of work.
Yeah.
But we do have a lot of listeners. And, you know, we thank everyone that has given already, including Brian. Thank you, Brian.
Thank you, Brian.
You're welcome.
Yeah.
Well, anyway, with that, let's get to the fun fact. You know who didn't have a very big presence on this episode?
Troy, yet again.
Deanna Troi.
Yeah.
Her presence is so reduced that when they are in the observation lounge and Q is telling the crew about the calamari,
Calamarain.
Yeah. About that new dish he's eating.
Right.
It's a trap.
He, that shot of her reaction is taken from the episode Evolution, which aired 12 episodes earlier.
Man.
So she wasn't even on set that day. That's how little her role was.
They done Troy wrong.
Yeah.
Although she can't really read the mind of an asteroid. I mean, she's kind of out of her element in this one.
But Q is going through such emotional trauma. You'd think she'd be a big role instead of Data.
That's true. That is true.
That is one thing I will say. I've having listened to the last few episodes, she doesn't read minds. She can sense emotions.
Oh, okay.
Because she's only half Beta Z.
That's true. But she gets a general sense of where people are at. She can tell when people are lying, though, right?
And she can sense joy. Great joy.
Oh, all right.
And pleasure. And when Riker's horned up.
Someone's horned up in this room.
I'm actually guessing she probably at some point has to have a filter for Riker.
I hope so. That would just be too awkward. Yeah.
Well, I just figure he's got this constant stream of that.
Yeah.
That's the background noise that
she's able to, like, set her settings to. So I've got a headline for Patrick's Log. This came out February 5th, 1990. United German Olympics team is possible for 1992? Munich, West Germany. A unified German team for the Olympics is, quote, inevitable and technically possible by the 1992 Games, West German National Olympic Committee President Willy Dauma said here today.
Calamari.
Yeah, calamari. His remarks followed a similar statement during the weekend by Jochen Grunewald, head of the German Gymnastic and Sport Federation, East Germany's main sports association. There will certainly be a united German team by the 1996 Olympics, said Grunewald, recently appointed by the... Yeah, so it's just everyone is freaking out. That's like, oh, wow, that's crazy to think of. A unified German team?
Well, I think that's great.
Yeah, I guess.
We're one step closer to the Federation.
I was going to say another fun fact. This episode came out on my 12th birthday.
Oh, really?
Oh, this day in history.
Indeed.
Yeah.
What were you doing on your 12th birthday?
I have no idea.
Were you watching this one?
No, that was actually a thing. Is I didn't discover The Next Generation until the summer of 1990 when I was staying at my grandmother's for a week. And every night while I was waiting for, you know, dinner, you know, to be made, I'd turn on the TV and there's this new show that I had never really seen. And the rest is history.
Huh.
You came in at a great time, though.
Yeah, you didn't have to watch the first and second season.
Which is probably why I don't remember Code of Honor at all.
Right.
Oh, thank God. Yeah, I don't remember much of the German unification. My granddad was from Germany. My grandma grew up, like, speaking German and stuff. So, like, they went back around when that happened, but I was really little. So I remember barely anything of this. But it is weird to think of, you know, when I look back at these headlines, like, oh, yeah, they were two different countries.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, like, this was still a year before the Soviet Union fell.
Yeah, the Soviet Union was still around.
This is before Desert Storm. I mean, all these things that were, you know, my junior high years were, you know, still yet to be.
Yeah. Well, there's a Star Trek movie that was basically about the fall of the Soviet Union, right?
Where they come Star together. Trek VI. Yeah, that was my first big Star Trek movie, and that's still my favorite one of the original series.
I've heard a lot of good things about it. Have yet to see it. But we'll probably get to the movies at a much, much later date. We should probably get into the episode.
Let's do it.
Yeah, again, like we said, this is Deja Q. And as always, Q does not show up in the beginning. Enterprise is sent on a pretty routine mission. They are trying to deflect a moon whose orbit was degenerated. Mm-hmm. So they go to this planet, Braille 4, and the moon normally has a circular orbit. It got into this kind of oval. And eventually the moon is going to crash into the planet's western continent. It's going to kill a lot of people. Real bad.
You know what I love about this scene?
What?
We just hop right into what is a mundane day on the Enterprise.
Yeah.
This is like just a normal routine thing they're dealing with, and we're in the middle of the scene. It's
right.
I was interesting that there was so much technobabble on the screen, but it seemed to make sense, and it didn't really... sometimes... That becomes a solution, and that was just more like the flavoring for this.
I normally, when they do technobabble, I honestly kind of glaze over and I get lost. But I could figure out what was going on.
It's like,
we don't want the moon to hit the planet. Don't make the rock hit each other.
Yes.
Try to stop that from happening.
Are there any solutions we can use, Jordy?
Nope.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's what they're doing. That's what they're dealing with.
The one thing I was distracted by the entire time, and Pat, I'm glad that you brought it up while we were watching.
Oh, no.
The Breelians, the alien race that is on this planet. They had a lot of prosthesis, had a lot of makeup to make their mouths look circular. They look like buttholes. Just to say that straight out.
One of them in particular.
Well,
just
the lady
one.
In particular, yeah.
You have now ruined this part of the episode for so many people because once you see that,
you can never unsee
no,
it.
No, it does.
You're going to see it.
Yeah, well.
I mean, just come on. It looks like a butthole. I don't know how else, like.
I hope that doesn't count as a strike.
If anyone out
the
there
episode.
Is in the makeup department of any sci-fi show or anything, just don't make circular mouths on people. Don't do that.
Yeah.
You know what it's going to look like.
Yeah.
It's just a big old puckering circle.
The reason I brought it up before we started the podcast is because I didn't really want it on the podcast.
Oh, I definitely did.
Oh, come on, Pat. You knew it was going to happen.
I was going to talk about it either way. I'm just glad that someone else saw what I saw.
Yeah. Well, it totally does.
It does. I'm sorry.
The whole, every time the female actress speaks, because hers is much more circular than the male's, and it's a much smaller mouth. I don't know. I feel like now I'm putting a foot into my butthole mouth.
No, they like overdid the prosthesis, I think, on her. And
yeah.
It's just very unfortunate. It was a poor choice, I think, on the makeup designer's part.
Yes. But great scene.
It is a good scene. And it gets interrupted by Q just kind of landing.
Yeah, this high-pitched noise starts.
Yeah.
And no one knows where it's coming from. And then Q appears.
Naked. Just falls on the floor.
And you see his butthole.
Yeah, well, no, you don't.
You do not. Although he apparently was all natural on set.
Was he really?
Yeah, apparently they said they couldn't find a way to hide it, and he's like, I'll just do it.
Oh, well, there you go.
A true professional.
But they never shot him from the waist down.
No. It was network TV, Pat. This is an HBO.
Well, he was hidden by Picard's body, I think, from the camera.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Well, then he could still warn. Okay, whatever. Let's move on.
Yeah. So
Memory Alpha says, man.
He shows up, and just out of nowhere, you know, just like a foal being born, just landing in the fetal position, naked on the bridge of the Enterprise, and everyone is very, very confused. He gets put into some kind of one-piece getup, and he's like, oh, this is not my color.
I will say, even when just being arriving like a newborn foal, he still manages to get off a one-liner.
Yes.
Just saying, red alert.
Yeah, oh, yeah, I forgot about that. Oh, man. He's always a ham.
I love John DeLancey so much.
And what he tells them is, A, I'm not responsible for this moon thing, all right? That is something totally different. And B, I can't fix it if I tried because the Q continuum took my powers away.
Yeah. And they thought, like, I was being a jerk.
Yeah. And everyone does not believe him.
Right.
Why would you?
No, he's lied too many times.
Yeah.
In his previous three appearances, making it a total of four.
But this part was so... Oh, man. He says, I picked a human because I was only given 1 millisecond to decide what to be. And I could have been anything I wanted. But all I could think of was a human. Because I had to pick something mortal. And I didn't want to be some kind of, like, dumb animal. And then I came here because y'all are the closest things that I have to friends.
Wow.
Yeah, and, like, Troy gets a pretty good burn on him. It's like, oh, I sense he's a total loser. he's very sad.
I think, and scared, wasn't it?
Yeah, terrified.
Yes.
But the big thing, of course, when that happens, Picard does a hand palm. Yeah.
The face palm.
The face palm, yes.
This is the origin of the meme you were telling us.
Yes, this is the Picard face palm meme. This is where it came from.
This is the screenshot where it happens, right after Q tells him that he is his friend, or the closest thing that he has to one, which is a strange thing for Q to say. How would Q have friends?
Right.
You know?
Well, he says that later, too. It's really hard to have friends or work in a group when you're all powerful.
Yeah.
I do think Picard is his closest thing to a friend, because Picard's the only being who has tricked him or made him think differently about his own actions.
That's true.
That's why he's fascinated.
He wouldn't show up here unless he felt challenged in some way.
Right.
That's why he keeps coming back.
Right.
So then he says, well, what can I do to convince y'all that I'm actually in this state? And Worf goes,
yes!
Die!
Yes!
God damn, Worf, that is cold!
That was awesome!
I love Worf.
Hell yeah!
Yeah, and Data does the tricorder scan thing. Turns out, yeah, he's human.
Yep.
Let's just take this guy to the brig, just so we're safe.
At this point, you start yelling at the TV.
Yeah, like, I don't trust him.
No.
Just kick him off.
Yeah.
Shoot him off into space. I don't give a shit. You know what he's going to do.
That's why they're more evolved humans than we are.
I guess so. He's just going to break out and do Q shit. That's what he always does.
Yeah.
Because
wherever he goes, trouble follows.
Right. Picard knows that. And he just doesn't. That's why he sent him to the brig in the first place. But people always break out in the brig. The last three times that we've seen someone get sent to the brig, they have broken out. God. That dude who was the super soldier,
yep,
turned into pure energy.
Yep.
Those Klingons that, you know, they captured from that freighter.
Yep.
Smuggled weapons in and broke out.
Mm-hmm.
Someone else got sent to the brig, too, and I think broke out. It's just people constantly break out of the brig.
Yeah.
To be fair, he did not break out of the brig, though.
He didn't. I was pleasantly surprised.
He was only in there for all of about 3 minutes.
Yeah, they
though.
Let him out yes. instead. But the brig just never does its job, is what mm-hmm. I'm saying. So he's being sent back to the brig, and Worf is taking him there. And the conversation he's trying to strike up with Worf is like, you know what, actually, I feel, in my heart, I feel like a Klingon. And he's trying to, like, connect with him mm-hmm. in some weird
like
way.
One Klingon to another, just let me go.
Yeah.
It's totally like a used car salesman at this point, and Worf is just kind of, like, just shaking his head, and finally he tells him to shut up, which is satisfying.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah, and as he's leaving, after he locks him up in the brig, Q calls him a Romulan.
Yeah.
Which is, like, that really pisses Worf off, because why wouldn't it?
Yeah.
And
then Q goes, oh, I should have become a Romulan.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure, though, if he had become a Romulan, he would be dead in probably 5 minutes.
Oh, yeah, for totally. Sure.
Tom Locke will get him like, nope, fire.
Yeah, and then they get, there's like some kind of scanning thing happens to the Enterprise, some kind of emissions, and they shrink down, they get into the brig. And then Q falls asleep. Like some kind of beam.
Yeah.
Ethereal
well, this
glow.
This bright light. There's a certain kind of wave. It starts with a B.
Berthold radiation. Yeah. I think it might be a real thing.
Yeah.
But.
Yeah.
And it fills the ship, but they don't know why. And then we, as the audience, see it come around Q.
Right. It is going towards Q. We don't know what this is yet, though.
Right. And Q is sleeping.
Yes. So Picard comes in, and he wakes up Q and he's like, hey, what are you doing to these people? Why are you messing with their moon? They didn't ask for this. And Q is saying, look, first of all, I have nothing to do with this. You got to believe me. My powers are gone. I can't fix this if I wanted to. I don't want to do this. You know, I'm just a human. And also, I had something terrible happen to me. I lost consciousness. What the hell was that?
I got real woozy and yeah. I lost consciousness.
And Picard's like, well, you fell asleep. And he's like, oh my God, that's awful. How do you deal with that? I thought I was dead. And he's like, you get used to it. All right. I don't believe you. What's going on with this thing? And Q is basically telling him that I don't have my power. Okay. But what I do have is a whole lot of knowledge.
Yeah.
You know, I've been basically a god for a long time. It's not like I forgot all that stuff. I have it here in my puny human brain. So I can help you all fix this problem if you want.
Yeah, at one point, I think this is maybe later, he says he's got like a
2005, I believe.
Yeah,
IQ, which is weird that they are using IQ, because that's like even today an outdated measure of intelligence, but whatever. He's super smart. He knows what's up.
He does.
He can help them in this problem if Picard will let him.
And he says this very nicely, too, where he's like, Picard, you really don't have a choice.
Right.
Like, you know you don't have an answer.
Yeah.
I might be able to help you out, man.
So Picard very reluctantly lets him out, but telling him to keep out of trouble.
And calls Data over.
Right.
To be his wingman.
Data is basically like his bodyguard this whole time. And Data is telling him that it is ironic that as a punishment, Q has been given what Data has really struggled to achieve.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a great scene between the two of them.
Right. Because, like, Data is telling them when they're walking to engineering that he doesn't have feelings. He doesn't know what it's like to be human. He works really hard to try, and Q just gets it. And he hates it. He hates being human. He hates his thing that Data has, like, worked real hard to achieve and can't. So if Data could feel frustrated, I assume that that is what he would feel.
Yeah.
Man.
I know.
Sucks to be Data.
it's part of his journey.
Yeah, that's his whole deal.
Grass is always greener, I guess.
Yeah. But Q is just like, what a miserable person. A miserable human that he ends up being.
Oh, totally.
Yeah.
Well, because he's what Riker would have become if Riker would have kept Q's powers in that episode we
right.
almost forgot about.
Yeah.
Where even human feelings and emotion don't even matter anymore.
Right.
It's also small, you know?
Yeah. Q doesn't appreciate it. Like, because
no,
they're in engineering and he's just like bossing everybody around and he's just whining. And while Geordi's trying to fix stuff.
Yeah.
And then Q is telling them, I think he says something that, well, obviously the problem with the moon is caused because there's some gravitational force at a right angle to the solar system. So just change gravity. And they're like, we can't do that. Oh, you can't do that? And he's like, oh, my back went out.
Yeah.
Well, he has a great line before, though, where, you know, George's like, well, how do I do that, Q? And he's like, I don't know. You just do.
Yeah.
But yeah, but then he realizes, like, wait, I'm in pain.
Yeah.
My back.
He hasn't experienced that before.
Don't you have a doctor on this ship?
Yeah. So they do have a doctor. They call Dr. Crusher. She comes down and tells him, it's like, look, you just have back spasms.
I love the look. Beverly Crusher is giving him.
She's already
scene.
Tired of his bullshit.
Yeah, she's like, dude, I don't got time for this. I got real sick people here.
And then he starts complaining about his stomach hurting.
Yeah.
And he's like, well, are you sick or something? He's like, no, it's rumbling. It's like, yeah, you need to eat. Humans need to eat. You have to eat something. And he's never eaten anything before. Mm-mm. So Data takes him to 10 Forward because, you know, he's got to go order something to eat. And he's asking him all these questions about, like, well, I don't know what to do. Like, what do I order? What do people eat? And Data's like, well, you know, I drink a lubricant.
Yeah, I think it's like it's a biomass suspended in like a
silicon
gel or something. And
yeah, it's like I can't really eat anything, but, you know, I have to eat oil, basically. He's a tin man. And he's like,
yeah,
well, you know,
his efficiency.
Yeah. What I have seen, though, is Deanna Troi, when she's sad because Q is sad, she likes chocolate. And it seems to have a profound psychological effect. She likes chocolate sundaes.
And it makes her happy.
Yeah. So he's like, I will order 10 chocolate sundaes.
First thing he ever eats, 10 chocolate sundaes.
Yeah. And they're like, oh, okay, we'll get that in the replicator for you. He's like, I am very upset, and I have also never eaten, so obviously I must be very hungry.
I do love how, like, there's servers there.
Yeah.
And they're just the look they give him, but no one says anything. He's like, all right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But
the weird thing is, and I was very excited because the opening credits said Whoopi Goldberg was in this episode. I love when she shows up. So Q had run into Guinan before and had warned Picard that Guinan is very dangerous and didn't allude to anything more. We just know that they know each other.
Called her a space imp or something.
Right.
Yeah.
So we know Guinan is very old.
Yeah.
And that's about it. Guinan shows up, and the first thing she says, like, well, look who got kicked out of the Continuum. I don't know where she heard this from. If she has, like, sources on the outside, or she just heard it at the bar or
she's
something.
Guinan.
Like.
She's Guinan. Yeah. She's extremely observant.
Yeah.
So she might have just seen it in the way he was walking.
And he, you know, is like, oh, well, look who it is. And they have this back and forth. But basically what she tells him is, like, she has this weird joy in seeing him down like this. Because she's telling him, like, look, you're going to have to learn how to interact with people. Because you have to rely on the charity of others now.
You're going to have to beg for help because you have nothing to really contribute.
Yeah. Which, I'd imagine, if you're the type of person that has known Q for a long time, it must feel pretty good to see him like this.
I also love, Data goes, many people don't think that Q is lying. And don't believe that he's human.
Oh, yeah.
And then Guinan grabs a fork and
just
stabs him with it.
Yeah.
Looks pretty human to me.
Yeah. Jesus.
They hate each other.
They do.
Which I think is really interesting because at this point, we know that Guinan's really old, but we really don't know much about her. She doesn't have, like, mystic powers like Q does.
But she's always been, like, this sort of kind sort of counselor figure. And,
right.
You know, it's like seeing, like, your grandmother suddenly, like, just,
exactly.
Like, where did this come from?
Yeah. She's had a life before this, obviously. You know, she's very old. But we always see her as, like, this, you know, friendly bartender.
Yes.
So it is weird to see her with a history. You know, I'm glad that we do get to see that.
And it's like there's some great cinematography where Q is on the ground, like just in pain, and Guinan's just sort of hovering over him, and just the shot was framed so nicely. Yeah, just
so well done.
Yeah, and then he turns to the 10 chocolate sundaes he's just ordered and decides he's not hungry. I don't know what they do with those, if they just throw them out or eat them themselves. Doesn't matter. It's a replicator.
People want for nothing.
Yeah. He warns everyone about Guinan again. Then, you know, he's just kind of sulking in the bar, and that kind of glittery, gossamery thing that we saw enter the ship before comes at him again. And it's like taking over his body or something. It looks like some kind of quantum leap thing.
Yeah. He kind of spasms out for a moment.
Right. It's like they're able to get rid of it.
Yeah.
It doesn't kill him. Mm-hmm. But then he just falls, and, you know, Guinan says, "How the mighty have fallen."
Okay, that was the cinematography scene.
Yeah.
But it also has the effect of, because they had to modulate the harmonics, that they can't do the beam to try to affect this moon as long as they have to keep the shields up to protect Q.
Right. Mm-hmm. So they have to have the shields up to protect him, but also they can't use, like, the tractor beam when they have the shields up, right?
Right.
Okay. So they've got
a dilemma.
Yeah, there's this weird, glittery thing outside of the spaceship, and it wants Q. They need Q to move the rock, the moon, but if they lower the shields, the glittery thing gets in. So,
great explanation.
Look, man, I'm new to this. It's the first time I've seen this.
But the glittery thing, as you're calling it, is a being.
Calamarian.
Yeah, the Calamarian.
We learn in the very next scene, they're in the conference room, and Q is telling him, he's like, look, there's these things, the Calamarians.
They're in the observation.
They're a vapor-based life form, and I've messed with them too much, and they're mad at me now.
Yeah, Guinan recognizes them, too. Like, she knows who they are, so.
Yeah. So I don't know if she was present when Q was messing with these things, but
she's probably talked to him.
I'm sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They had meetings.
Yeah. He
like
has
Al-Anon meetings, you know.
Yeah. He says that he didn't like kill them or do them any injustice, but he also says that one person's injustice is another person's amusement or something like that. He is overstepped his boundaries with these things, and now they are seeking revenge.
He says that line very smugly as well, as though he's proud of what he did.
Mm-hmm.
I do think it serves a purpose, though, because if Q had gone, like, super far, like, you know, genocide sort of thing, he would lose sympathy. So he has to be just on the side of mischievous.
He's a trickster.
He's not, like, pure evil.
Yeah, he's a trickster.
He's at, like, that Loki role.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. And they can't make him, like, super evil. I don't think he's killed all of them, but he has tormented them in some way, and they did not like it, and now they're back for revenge. Riker points this out to him, and he's like, look, Q, we can't spend all of our time defending you from the many enemies that you have made.
Yeah, because this is when Picard kind of realizes, like, oh, wait, you didn't just come here because you like us.
Yeah.
You're here for protection.
Yeah, we got shields, and you know that you need them. But all that said, he has a lot of knowledge. They need to move a moon. So they got to figure out how to do that.
Yeah.
They can use him still. It's just they got to protect him from dying. So that's a new thing that they got to worry about, because there always is a new thing you got to worry about with Q.
Yeah. Should have left him in the brig.
Yep. Just ask him questions from there.
Yeah, exactly.
To be fair to Q, his idea does kind of work a little bit.
Yeah. It is.
Well, I mean, like, it
doesn't. He's not wrong.
I mean, it gives him another chance to try this, because they were going to be like, this is the last orbit, but now they've gained themselves another orbit.
Yeah. So they take him back down to engineering, and he's talking to Data, and Data's trying to tell him, it's like, look, man, you have a lot of knowledge. You don't have a lot of interpersonal skills. I'm an android. I understand how that works, but I've learned how to talk to people. You have to learn how to talk to people when you're working on a team. So let's try it when we're down in engineering. And he just immediately screws up. He's trying to order Geordi around, and he's like, this man seems to think he's in charge of me. And Data's like, yeah, because he is. He's the lieutenant. He's the commanding officer in engineering. You need to listen to what he says. He gets Q gets sent to, like, some station, and he hates it. And he's trying to give, like, all these commands and stuff. They're trying to – I'm not – entirely sure on the technobabble, so forgive me if I screw this up. They're trying to move the Warp field.
So they're trying to extend the warp field around this moon.
Yeah.
Because by doing that, they can
it would
they
change
can,
the
they
mass?
Can lower the gravitational constant locally.
Oh,
because that was a Q's idea. It was like, you know, you can't change the gravitational constant of the universe.
But you can do it for the moon.
But we can do it like for a little bit.
Oh.
And this came up a few episodes ago where they can extend their shields effectively outside of the ship and make it like a wider net, for lack of a better term.
But they can also do that with the warp.
Yes.
Yeah. So like, cool. Well, the thing is, the shield is a energy protection sort of in our universe. The warp bubble actually takes them like out of our universe into subspace, right. Which is how they travel faster than light.
Hmm.
And by the way, I did want to mention one thing. When Q was mentioning how, you know, I'm not good at relationships, I'm not good in groups, my first thought was he should take an improv class.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, he should.
Sign up for some playground theater. but yeah, he is trying to order everyone around, but his general kernel of the idea is correct. Changing the gravitational field of the moon. And as they're trying to do it, though, the Calamarians come and they attack him, and it's like lifting him up. And the only person that saves him is Data. I don't know how he's able to dispatch these Calamarians, but...
Well, I think they end up having to turn the shields back on.
Right.
And but, yeah, the energy field that's taking Q sort of bodily, you know, up into the air... Data's grabbed his legs and spread to him as well. And
right.
So when they cut off the shields, they both collapse them.
Oh, okay. But it like, fries Data's circuits.
It's like Data was the grounding of the electricity.
Ah, that makes sense.
Yeah, I think that's the way we were supposed to see it, at least.
Okay. So they're in the sick bay, and Geordi's there, Dr. Crusher's there, Picard is there. They're all working over Data. They're saying a lot of techno babble, and it's just basically, he's going to be fine. It's just he's real messed up right now.
Yeah.
And Q is fine.
His positronic brain was almost fried, but it's okay.
They said if he was
human. They said.
Yeah, and the other thing that's important is they said if he was a human, he would be dead.
And Q was like, I'm a human, and
right.
I survived.
Yeah.
But that's because he wasn't the grounding wire.
He wasn't the grounding wire. Yeah. And he was just in the right place at the right time.
Yeah.
But this is kind of where he starts to change, because he starts thinking of himself, you know, like, why would he do this for me?
Yeah. But what they have done, though, is they bought the planet a little more time. So they knew that what they did worked. They just have it, like, I think, one more orbit. So, like, one more phase of this moon, and they can try whatever. But right now, they got to get Data back up and running, and Q is going through, like, some kind of crisis or something. Everyone wants to get rid of him. They're like, look, just... All right, you helped us, but you're also causing a lot of trouble, and the sooner we get rid of you, the sooner these Calamarians go away. So,
yeah,
Geordi wants to get rid of them.
Yeah, because even in another orbit, you know, they'll have to take the shields down again to try this, and they would just attack once again.
Yeah. And Q goes to the ready room to talk to Picard. He's drinking his Earl Grey tea hot. Q is saying, look, why did this being risk his life for me? A guy he doesn't know. If the situations were reversed, I can't say I would do the same for him. And I feel shame. Q feels shame. That's crazy.
Yeah. First time he's ever felt that before.
Exactly. So he doesn't know what to make of this. These are all obviously new feelings for him.
A great moment for Deanna Troi to walk in.
Yeah.
Help him out. Oh.
Nope.
Oh, that didn't happen.
No, they just have that one reaction shot from her that was recycled from another episode. Yeah. I think Troi would have been good here.
Yeah.
But
Picard points out how what he considers, you know, humanity's weakness is actually humanity's strength.
Right. People are willing to risk their lives for each other. That's how we're able to get spaceships up in the sky in the first place, dude. People are willing to put their lives on the line. You are not. You are a coward. And Q is now openly recognizing, yes, I am a coward. And Picard just he's sick of his bullshit, basically. He says, yeah, you know, you should feel shame. Every time you show up on this spacecraft, all you do is torment people. And it is finally biting you in the ass. And you're asking us to come and just wipe your butt for you every single time that you cause some kind of problem. Like, you didn't come here because we're your friends. You came here because we have shields. And we're sick of doing it.
Yeah.
Q is like... actually successfully shamed by this conversation. which is pretty impressive. I would feel like if Captain Picard chewed me out, I would feel like shit.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Especially because he's my moral compass.
Right. I know you would feel like shit.
Oh,
Pat.
My God. I would cry.
Yeah.
At the very least.
Right. Damn. But yeah, it's pretty brutal. Like, you got this omnipotent being to feel bad about himself.
Yeah.
So he goes back to the sick bay, and they're fixing Data. And
Data is fine at this point, but
right.
He can't talk.
He can't talk because they're recalibrating his language sensors or something. But Q leans in, and he tells him, look, there are so many things that would want to be you. You are so powerful. You can do anything. You're incredibly strong. You're incredibly smart. You're brilliant. You just don't have feelings. But even then, you are a better human than I would ever be.
Yes! Loved that scene.
Damn.
Man. So good.
And then he leaves. And again, this is a problem with security on the ship. He goes to the shuttle bay. Yet again, some rando is able to just go to the shuttle bay and steal a shuttle.
Although in his defense, I'm guessing Picard may have messaged the security guy and like, look, if he wants to leave, just look the other way for like 5 minutes.
My headcanon is that, yes.
No, your headcanon's wrong.
Yeah.
Because Picard yells at him instantly.
Yeah, he's surprised. But
still, yeah, you can just walk.
They don't have anyone just watching to say, hey, no. He's
a
human
future
now.
Future utopia, Patrick.
But they've had multiple problems with the shuttle bay specifically. There's that one friend of Wesley's that stole the shuttle and almost killed himself.
Oh, yeah.
I think there's someone. There's Picard's clone.
Yes.
I will just say, if stealing shuttlecrafts is something that is a problem for you, Star Trek is not the series for you.
I understand why it happens as a plot device. They need some
they
way to get
learn.
Off the ship. But they
never,
ever.
It learn. Will happen again and again and again through every Star Trek series.
Yeah.
You yeah.
just walk into one and fly off. And then they're like, hey, where are you going?
It does lead.
Do we blast them out of the sky now? As opposed to having one security officer.
It does lead, though, to a really good line. Because so what he's trying to do is sacrifice himself.
Yep.
You know, he's flying this little shuttlecraft, and he's trying to lead the Calamarians away from the moon, just away from the situation, because they want him. And Picard tries to beam him back, and Riker's like, what the hell are you doing? And Picard goes, well, it's a perfectly good shuttlecraft, which is a good point. You don't want to waste all that. But they're not able to do it. The Calamarians are catching up with the shuttle. It looks like Q, in human form, is done for. But as he's about to be swallowed up by this huge vapor cloud that hates him, Dorn from Major League shows up. Q2, the same guy that played Dorn from Major League,
yes,
shows up on the shuttle. And he's wearing the same outfit that Q complained about.
He even makes a comment about it.
Right. He's like, oh, terrible colors. So yeah.
And I will say, by the way, there was a little bit of foreshadowing about this because, you know, the transporter was not operational. Then Picard did tell him, like, well, use the tractor beam. That wasn't working. All these things.
They're not able to get him back.
Right.
They did what they could, but to no avail. Q2, though, is able to help him.
You know what I love about Q2's personality? Is it's just as loud as Q. Like, it's
just as flamboyant.
It's just as over the top.
Right,
as Q.
Just as hammy.
Yeah, exactly.
He does, it's like, similar mannerisms and all this stuff.
It's perfect.
He's even, like, you know, accusing Q of, like, all these things he's done bad, and Q's like, hey, wait a minute. You know, you misplaced an asteroid belt, you know?
Mm-hmm.
He's like, we're not talking about me.
But he is, you know, he's impressed because Q just did this act of selflessness. And that has moved him to give him his powers back. He can't take this to the Q continuum because he says, if I say this was an act of selflessness, it would take centuries and centuries and yada, yada, yada. I don't want to go through it. But I have the power to give you your power back. It's restored.
They did also mention, though, too, that, you know, when he arrived, Q was like, oh, good, Q2, you were in my corner. And he's like, well, actually, I got you kicked out.
Yeah.
So that's...
Right. There's just probably constant backstabbing in the continuum.
Yeah, totally.
If they're
they don't
all
work
like
as
this.
A team.
Yeah.
And you see a little bit of that more in Voyager much, much later.
Mm-hmm.
But it's... I don't think this Q2 ever appears again.
I don't believe so.
Oh, that's a shame.
Yeah, because it was great.
Because Q brings the Calamarian cloud into his hand. He's like, oh, man, if you think I was messing with you before... it is on now. And then Q2 appears as like the little like devil on your shoulder or whatever. Is like, look, man, I just went over this with you. And he's like, oh no, I wasn't gonna mess with them. And he just like blows them away.
He blows it away. So he still kills them.
I don't think he did.
I like to believe he just transported them somewhere else.
Yeah, I know. But yeah. They just disappeared. Who knows?
Right. So, but they're gone. He moved them to some other part of the universe, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And the shuttle's gone. They just assume everyone there died. But Q just suddenly appears on the bridge wearing a poncho with a mariachi band.
Blasting away on a trumpet.
Playing the trumpet. Because he just got his powers back. So he is celebrating. He makes cigars appear in everybody's mouths. He makes these sexy women show up on Riker's arms. Which, God, the line from Riker, I don't need your fantasy women.
So he beams them to Worf.
Yeah. Well, and I love Q's response. He's like, you didn't mind them when you didn't have a beard.
Yeah.
He tells him, you're so stolid.
Yeah, Riker is constantly in the holodeck. Come on.
Yeah, we all know.
I've seen
this
episode.
He's got his harp ladies.
Yeah, he's got his harp ladies. He's got Minuet. Like,
he's got his things.
Yeah, he's just trying to say, not here, not now.
Yeah, come on.
Bad time. I'm on the clock, dude.
Deanna's right there, not saying a word.
Yeah, poor Deanna. And so Q is saying that he wants to celebrate. Picard says, well, I don't. We've got this moon, remember? They had been, just before this, the Enterprise, they got this transmission from the butthole mouth aliens. And they were like, hey, we really appreciate all the work that you've done. We're all going to die. Yeah, but we just want you to know, we know it's not your fault. So this is the mood that the Enterprise is in. And then Q shows up with this mariachi band and stuff. Picard demands that they all leave. He's not in any mood. So
Dad's in no mood.
Right. So they do. And then Q gets rid of the poncho. He is wearing a captain's outfit.
Yep.
Earlier in the episode, I forgot to mention, he had asked for a Starfleet uniform.
He did. He loves them.
He loves wearing these things, which Picard doesn't. Picard hates it. So he says that, you know, when I was a human, I was ill-equipped to thank you, but as myself, you have my everlasting gratitude. And then he tells Data that he is giving him a little going-away present. Data, I think, thinks for a minute he's going to be made human.
Well, he even says, like, don't make me.
Well, he's like, you know, if your intention is to turn me human.
Right.
Q is like, nope. Yeah. I would never do that to you. That would be horrible.
Right.
Well, that came up again in that Riker episode. What was it called? Q?
Hide and Q.
Where he says he can make everybody's, like, wishes come true. And that he could make Data a human. And Data, in that point, does tell Q, like, no, I don't want to be just made one. I want to learn.
He wants to become one.
Yeah.
So he thinks that Q is going to make him a real boy, which he does not. He disappears.
He's
and
like,
then,
I would never curse you with that.
Yeah. The next thing that we see is Data laughing for a long time.
Yeah, hysterically.
And it turns out he had left him just with the ability to do that.
That one laugh.
Yeah.
Yep.
And he, after he does that, you know, he has that line. He's like, I don't know what happened, but it was a great feeling.
Right.
And I also love Brent Spiner's acting, because partway through the laugh, he kind of stops, becomes totally serious Data again, and then starts laughing again.
Yeah.
And just seamlessly goes back and forth between total deadpan, laughing hysterically.
Yeah. That's got to be incredibly hard to do this role.
Yes.
But, yeah, so he gives them... He gives him, like, the personal experience of what it's like to find something funny.
Yes.
Which we have seen Data go through this struggle. He had to deal with Joe Piscopo.
Yeah. He tapped the wrong well trying to be funny.
Exactly. But Q just let him have it for just one brief second. And then they get a call from Brielle 4. And they say, look, we don't know what you did, but you did it. We're back to our regular orbit, and they, you know, Data checks the scanner, and the moon is back to a circular orbit. It is never going to threaten the planet again. Thank you so much from the bottom of our hearts. They didn't do anything. They don't know what happened.
Yeah.
So it turns out Q, when he was granted his omnipotent power, was able to fix the moon. So Picard says, well, you know, maybe there was just some little bit of humanity left in Q after all, from this experience. And then a lit cigar appears in his hand, and Q shows up as like the little devil on the shoulder for a second, and he says, "Well, don't count on it."
Yeah.
And then that
perfect
was
perfect ending.
Yeah.
That was so great. I loved it. I love this episode.
Solid
it's so
episode.
Fun. Yeah. So, Brian, this is the part of Pat Trek where we like to rate what we just saw. If we thought this was an amazing episode, you gotta watch it. We set to kill. If we thought it was pretty good, if it comes up in the queue, give it a watch. We set to stun. And if it was horrible, avoid at all costs, we leave it in the holster. So, Brian, what'd you think?
Well, one of the reasons I wanted to come on is that this is my favorite Q episode. Definitely set to kill.
Yeah! Yeah.
Pew, 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 pew.
Why?
I love like the humor of it. I mean, it's Q as we've never seen him before, having to deal with like, you know, losing his powers and having to deal with that, and it humanizes him somewhat, which, you know, as a being of just such immense power, you need that to be able to connect to the character. And I love his character. You know, I always love when he comes back. And but yeah, this was like just the perfect little, I mean, it was a character arc, and it wrapped up nicely in the end, and I just, really good episode.
Yeah. Patrick, what do you think?
I agree, set to kill.
Yeah.
I think all of the Q episodes except for Encounter at Farpoint, I gave a set to kill. I just really like them, mm-hmm. and I feel like this was probably one of the best ones that I've seen so far. You know, like, it talks about what it means to be a human. Mm-hmm. And it's cool to see Q brought low. I mean, I like the character, but God, he's an asshole.
Yeah.
And it's good to see him finally get his.
Yeah.
And I think the writers understood that needed to happen at some point. And I don't know, it fleshes him out a little more. It was just, it was a solid episode.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, and to your point, he always has the high ground.
Right.
Speaking of the high ground,
the
reason this is a set to kill episode for me is because we just went from the political intrigue of the high ground to this very fun kind of farce of an episode.
Oh, yeah.
So what I love about it, and it's obviously set to kill.
Pew, pew, yeah, pew, right. Pew, 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 pew.
But we went from what a heavy, serious episode of Star Trek can be to this exciting version of, like, more of a good time take on sci-fi.
Yeah.
And so it the range of Star Trek is really captured in these past two episodes. And I love it. And I love Q. I think he is probably within my top five favorite characters from all of Star Trek. So when he shows up, it's always a really healthy, or it's always a really exciting moment.
Yeah, he's my favorite recurring villain.
Yeah, totally. Is he a villain?
Well,
he's a trickster.
Antagonist. How's that?
Yeah, antagonist for sure. It's like his quirk, a villain. Right. Oh, you're not a big Deep Space Nine guy.
Well, he's complex.
Yeah,
that's
exactly
the thing.
Exactly. And those characters are always very exciting.
And like I said, I want to sit down and actually go through DS9 now that I think I'm old enough to appreciate it.
Mm-hmm.
Because at the time when it first came out, I didn't watch it because I was still very much a Roddenberry's vision of the future. This is a utopian. How dare they move away from that?
Yeah.
And now I realize, oh, because that's interesting.
That's very true. Well, is there anything else you guys want to talk about before we get out of here?
Actually, I did want to mention one thing.
Okay.
All right.
A friend of mine listens to the podcast, and she pointed out that in our last time I was on, we had talked about them not knowing human or 20th century idioms. And
oh.
I think we mentioned a toaster.
Yeah.
She points out that apparently in Voyager, Tom Paris has a toaster at one point that he uses to cook food for B'Elanna.
Mm. Oh, that's right. Measure of a Man. They call Data a toaster.
Yes.
So they still have toasters.
So, yes. Tom Paris is a 20th century nerd,
which
kind of makes sense. But
yeah.
I figured I'd give a shout out to my friend Lenny. So
yeah,
thank you for
kind
telling
of
us.
Kind of like we know what a shoehorse or a horseshoe is. A shoehorse. See, it's so old. No, but we know what a horseshoe is, although they're not part of our daily lives.
Yeah, for most people. Yeah. Huh.
If you happen to be out in the western suburbs, the Unwritten Works of William Shakespeare plays every other Friday out at Westside Improv in downtown Wheaton. It's been a lot of fun, and hope people come out sometime because it's a great set of people to play with, and it's a fun show.
When is it?
It's basically every other Friday.
Ah, gotcha.
Just check out westsideimprov.com, the website, and If anyone happens to be a senior level Linux system engineer, I'm still trying to hire desperately, so he'll hook me up. I'm just at Brian Sebi on Facebook or Twitter, and you can find me spelled just like it is in the notes, I'm sure, for this podcast.
Patrick, what do you think? Could you do that job?
No, I can't. But I am an unemployed copywriter, so if anyone needs any ad copy written for them, hit me up. Just message me on Twitter at Patrick Winninger. Well, so, the one thing I would like to mention is the Patrek Patreon.
Oh, the Patreon?
The Patrekion.
Yeah, the Patrekion.
Patrekion. yeah, I know we talked about it up at the top, but starting in May, we're going to have some premium content for patrons. We're going to have, I believe, actual plays of Star Trek Adventures.
Yeah, I'm almost done with the edit.
Yeah.
Yeah, I got to get all the Star Trek sound effects.
All the sound effects in. Yeah. And then we will start doing the original series. So if you are a fan, again, all of our regular episodes will be free of charge, but we will start making some premium content for y'all. So look out for that at patreon.com/Patrek.
Yeah.
And if you guys need to generate more Star Trek Adventures episodes sometimes, let me know.
Yeah, we invited you last time.
I was out of town, I believe.
You were. You had something important to do. Well, I don't know what it could have possibly been, but you did.
I'm hoping we get some ship combat coming up.
I know. Well, yeah. They released the rules for ship combat, but in the module, there wasn't any ship combat.
Yeah. Maybe in the future. Yeah. Maybe in the next one.
We're almost to the point. Like, come June, I think, the actual, like, final version is supposed to be released.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So right now, they just released character creation, which I don't think we'll put on a podcast, because, like, who wants to talk about, I don't know. You got to be really into the crunchy side of a role-playing game to spend too much time talking about, like,
if you want to give
building.
At the $10 a month level.
you'll get
character creation.
You'll get the most boring piece of podcasting yeah. in the world.
Well, I remember back when I was in high school, we had a Star Trek club. And my friend Sean would run LARPing for us, which yeah. I don't think we called the time that, but we basically had our own ship, we had our own characters, and he would come up with these plots and things. And I just remember we'd go in like the school where we had like a little like area where we could pretend it was the bridge, and I had the Star Trek Generation soundtrack with bridge noises on there, which also had the turbo lift doors, so like every 3 minutes
Hell yeah.
it would suddenly go to very loud swooshing sounds. We had to rewind to the last previous one, but. I remember those times fondly.
Yeah. Well, have you ever played Lasers and Feelings?
No.
Oh, so Lasers and Feelings is a non-official Star Trek role-playing game where it's very, very simple. You either you're either really good at lasers or you're really good at feelings. It's super fun, and it's like a 2D6 system, so
that's
really basic. But we should play that sometime, too, because the official Star Trek Adventures game is very crunchy. There's a lot of dice rolling going on.
Yeah, it takes a little getting used to, but I enjoy the sessions that we had.
Yeah, me
and
too.
They
it's
are
a blast.
Definitely worth a $5 a month donation at patreon.com/Patrek.
Oh, absolutely. The momentum mechanic, now I'm just getting into game yeah. mechanics that I love, but the momentum mechanic is one of my favorite things in a role-playing game that Star Trek Adventures has. Speaking of role-playing games, I do a podcast with my friends called The Dungeon Rats. You can submit your encounters, plot twists, magical items, or anything else you want a group of me and my friends to deal with in our Dungeons & Dragons dungeon crawl. You can submit that at thedungeonrats.com or give us a listen there. Or follow me on Twitter at PatLikesATweet because Facebook is for noobs.
Let's see what's out there.
Beaches. Hot sauce. Peaches.